This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, you've reached The Usual Suspects on a Monday, and we are having a fun day of it as we continue to kick some things around, talk about some things. You guys are passionately chiming in, and we appreciate that. We've covered a lot of topics. One thing we haven't got to yet is your Houston Rockets, who, when we get to a weekend situation, sometimes we don't fully recap because of the fact that we sometimes lose sight of the fact that there were two games before we got on the air again. But Friday night, the Rockets lose one at New Orleans. And then yesterday, for those of you that didn't watch enough of the Pro Bowl and forgot that the Rockets were playing as well and no one cared, the Rockets took care of the Phoenix Suns. So I guess get your guys' comments on the fact that, well, I guess the most important news of the weekend, injuries.
Yeah.
In the Friday night game, DeMarcus Cousins, who was having one hell of a year for the Pelicans, very devastating news as he blows out his Achilles. He's done for the year. And then yesterday, Chris Paul has a groin, but he's okay. And Trevor Ariza has a hamstring, and D'Antoni already saying he's probably not going to make the entire trip, not let alone the home game tomorrow night against Orlando. He won't play in San Antonio or Cleveland or the entire road trip.
It makes you a little nervous. All these injuries are starting to pile up and be, you know, is Paul going to miss any time?
They won't say for sure. He says no, and after the game said he was fine, but they want to make sure that he's extra okay. So, I mean, look, they're playing Orlando tomorrow night. They should take care of business. You probably want to give him a little, if you're even close to bordering on what to do, you need to give him the night off tomorrow night.
Right.
But you really like to see him play against Cleveland, against San Antonio, against teams that, you know, you're going to send messages and you're going to gauge a lot of things.
Well,
right?
You want them to play, especially the teams in the West that matter on home court and whatnot. So you definitely want to see that. But it worries me. You just hope that they get all these injuries out of the way if that's possible.
I wrote about
it all done now.
I wrote an article last night for Sports Map, and you know, the biggest thing to me is that this team, when it's healthy, can play with anyone. But people are losing sight of the fact that when they're not, they can become a pretty average team pretty quickly. And so they've got to be extra careful. And one of the things that I think they're missing, and you and I talked about this last week, but I think they're missing some depth up front simply because you don't want to take any chances. I like what they have right now for the most part. But I think you can never be too careful, and if there's any ways that you can, without, especially if you don't have to spend anything to get it, if there's ways that you can bolster an already strong team, you got to do it because you just never know. This Cousins thing, they said before he got hurt, the Pelicans were actively pursuing a small forward that could really play, even if they had to give up some resources and draft picks to get it, because they thought, you get a small forward with that front line of Davis and Cousins, you got something that could really give people fits in the NBA.
Yeah, going back to your depth thing, I still think this is one of the deeper teams in the NBA, the Rockets. And, I mean, it's the NBA. It's not like they don't go 52 deep. So losing any of these guys in the main rotation can affect a team. I don't think it's just them.
But Barry, here's my point. A Golden State team that loses even one of their biggest stars, they still win 9 out of 10. They still go on a run. They don't have a fall off. The Rockets, for whatever reason, maybe it's just they haven't figured that out yet because they do have enough talent, or maybe because they're just not, they still, from a straight out talent perspective, it's different because their four stars are unselfishly sharing the ball, and they don't, whereas the Rockets' two stars are one still in such a huge part of their offense that they have the ball in their hands so much that when they're out, it changes everything. The dynamic of you can play them together. You can play them separate so that you always have that one leader on the floor. When one of those guys gets hurt, they're a totally different team.
Yeah, but I think, too, when I talk about depth, I'm not saying that the Rockets have necessarily a big three. Like, I wouldn't say Chris Paul, James Harden, and Clint Capella are a big three compared to some other teams' big threes, specifically the Golden State Warriors. But I think the Rockets have enough depth when you talk about the fact that, you know, Nene and Mbamute and Gerald Green and some of these guys that come off the bench add quality depth to a team that outside of Ryan Anderson's already a good team, really good team. We've seen that all year. But when you have the Warriors, if you lose this Steph Curry for a few games or you lose a Durant, they still have a Steph Curry and a Draymond Green. So they're at the top end of the star level. They're in a much better position than the Rockets. Right. So, yeah, if you lose a James Harden or you lose a Chris Paul, it's one thing. But, you know, you lose a Trevor Ariza and Mbamute steps in and they still – they did
but
just
we
fine.
Saw what happens when you lose Mbamute for a few weeks, how quickly they fall off defensively. And that's something that you have to take into consideration
that's
as well.
That's a good point. I mean, defensively, so, they suffer.
Yeah, that can hurt the overall team because at the end of the day, as long as they get the wins, people don't care what the score was against Phoenix yesterday. They got the win. That's the most important thing. But if they start losing games, then people start freaking out too. And that's where I just think, look, Tarik Black has shown us, and Nick, you're up close and personal on every single game. Tarik Black has shown us, great kid. He's got a lot of promise. But when the lights are bright or when his number's called, when they are forced to use him, he chokes up a little bit. You can't rely on him. And if you can't rely on him in the regular season, can you rely on him in the playoffs?
I don't expect D'Antoni to do so. I mean, if everybody was screaming for Gerald Green to play, Trevor Ariza went down 36 seconds into the game. Right. Tarik Black, I don't think he got a single second of playing time. And Gerald Green, I would make the argument. You know how when coaches anticipate questions, so they just kind of answer it in advance, so just to kind of fend off the questions. And I kind of think that's what D'Antoni does with Green. He knows he's not getting playing time, so he's like, yeah, I still got to figure out a way to get Gerald Green in. I would make the argument if Trevor Ariza did not get injured yesterday that Gerald Green wasn't playing yesterday, and Gerald Green wasn't in the lineup until long after the Trevor Ariza injury. So my point of saying all this, no, he's not. They're not going to trust someone like Tarik Black. I mean, they're barely going in to reach for Gerald Green, who I feel fits the system much better than Black. And so I don't know. I think Luke, though, I think it's a good job by you to mention him. I think he's the role player to be talked about right now. His defense is really important. He still can score. He's a great three-point shooter. And I see why he trusts him more than a Gerald Green.
He's the unsung glue guy for the defensive aspect.
Yeah. To me, you losing a guy like him makes a bigger difference on this team. Because he's one of your first guys off the bench. He's that, you know, like you said, he's...
See, and I'll give you the fact that they have depth on the wing because of Gerald Green, because mm-hmm. of guys... And look, they hit it, they struck it rich. They didn't know what they were getting when they got Gerald Green because there was a lot of teams like Milwaukee and Phoenix that threw him on the scrap heap when he was playing, was putting up numbers with all of his previous teams. And all of a sudden, suddenly they don't want him, but yet it's where they hit the gold mine. But from the same perspective... You want to be as prepared for the playoffs as possible because we've seen how an injury at the wrong time can screw a team that's not two. And if you can, especially at no cost, because I don't want to mess with the depth that they have. And I don't want to give up resources twofold on a trade. I don't want to give up resources that they have for the future, especially cap room. And I don't want to give up anybody that's in the rotation now or a guy that's a key backup because it can hurt you when you think, just when you think you're safe, oh, I can give up this guy because I got so-and-so and so-and-so. And then you get an injury and you're like, God, I wish I had that guy back. So the article that I wrote for Sports Map is essentially three potential guys out there or could be out there that you don't have to give up a thing for that make you an even deeper team and better prepared for a long playoff run against those
veterans. Well, who are they?
You're supposed to read the article, Barry.
Oh, okay.
Sportsmap.com.
Where is it?
But I will say this, because we talked about one, and I think that he's one that's going to be controversial in Andrew Bogut. But I thought you saw some pretty good examples in the game yesterday. And one guy that I think is a perfect fit, if there's ever... If Phoenix is a young team, and we know buyouts are coming right after the trade deadline for guys that they couldn't move.
Yes.
If Phoenix buys out one or both of their big men... They are a perfect fit for the Houston Rockets.
Okay.
So check out the sportsmap.com, the column on what may be the missing link for your Houston Rockets.
All right. I'm going to read it right now at the break.
Cool. All right. Good luck. It's a novel. You might need more time.
Oh, that's a lot of words.
Yeah. All right. We're going to continue to roll on. It's Nick, Barry, and Joel. We're the usual suspects. This is ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. Five.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Usual Suspects, final hour of the big show before we turn it over to Fred, AJ Jung, and the Blitz. We've been talking about a lot of things, and including the Pro Bowl, which pains me. But we were talking a little basketball before the break. We had a caller that did not want to go on the air but wanted to ask the question, what's with Gerald Green? Why the kind of reputation that had some teams wanting to pass on him? Well, I think people forget Gerald had a first stint with the Rockets. This isn't his first go-round, and it didn't go well, and they didn't keep him around. And part of it was just a maturity thing. And the other thing is, Gerald's always been known as a scorer. But in order to score, you got to shoot. And a lot of times his shot selection to get his points did not sit well with some of the teams that he played for. Now, I can't give you examples of or reasons why Milwaukee and Phoenix had issues with him in the past year or so. But I can tell you that the undeniable thing is he has basketball ability, and he has shown that he can play if given the right opportunity. It's just not for every team. And thankfully, it's for the Rockets, and it's worked out for him.
I could see where maybe it's because of inconsistency. Maybe he's not. When you look at his career and what he's doing, well, and his stint with the Rockets was one game. So
that's what I mean.
I mean.
But he was being kept around for quite a while. Let's just put it that way.
So I just feel like when you look at he'll go from 10 points in a season to 5 to 15 to 11. And I know playing time and system has a lot to do with that. But even if you look at it this year, when he started off like a house on fire and he had 8 points in playing 18 minutes when Ariza went down. So I think some of it could do with just the fact that maybe he's just too inconsistent for some teams. I don't know. Or maybe there's something that you don't
know.
Maybe
I know
too
much, but I'm just saying that there was a time and there have been times when Gerald sometimes puts Gerald above the team in certain regards.
Okay.
But like yesterday was a perfect example. We were talking about this in the production meeting. The big thing was he got some time because Ariza went down. And then they get him the ball in the corner, and he fumbles it a little bit, and there's a defender right up in his grill. And all in one motion, he gets control of the ball and goes up and takes a wild three. That's okay in D'Antoni's system. They're going to be okay with that. But there are, like, put that in Tom Thibodeau's system, and that is a death sentence. Because Tibbs is going to be like, horrible shot, not the play I called, not the kind of shots we're looking for, and he'd probably yank him out, sit him down, and he may not play him again. That's just what I'm talking about systematically.
But he was making those, he was throwing up some ducks early on, and they were going in. He was throwing up wild shots.
Yeah, that's how he makes his shots for some reason.
Yeah, some coaches don't care.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Some coaches don't care. And again, like we've been saying on this show, I want Minnesota to just throw it out there and let them get up and down the floor like the Rockets do because they have a ton of talent. But they won't, and Tibbs won't let it happen. Some people are just control freaks like that, and that's what makes their systems hard to fit in and play for. That might have been the case with Gerald Green. I just know he's come a long way, and I'm very happy the Rockets picked him up and it's worked out the way it has.
You mentioned that in your article in Sports Map that there was, three potentials that could, mm-hmm. that the Rockets could sign?
Yeah.
Well, you've got Taylor on the line who wants to ask you about another potential. Taylor, welcome to the program.
What's going on, fellas?
What's up, man?
Happy Monday to you guys.
Back at you.
Hey, I was wondering what would it take to get a guy like Avery Bradley. He's playoff tested. Guys plays defense. That's what we need to battle with the Warriors. You see the games that we've been in that with him, we turned him over tremendously. That's what it's going to take. And I know he flip-flops Harden and CP3, he's on and out. But I think you can bring Avery Bradley off the bench and you can give him Eric Gordon, they can hold it down, and you can have your double barrels out there at the same time, a lot more on the floor. I know, but the guy is tough as nails. I know we probably won't be able to re-sign him. I don't know. There'll probably be something, but the guy's playoff tested. He can shoot the three. I mean, the guy I like the guy. I would love to have a guy on our team, but I know you're talking about bigs or whatever, but I mean,
Taylor, what are you willing to give up for him? Because here's the thing.
That's what I'm asking you guys. What would it take? I mean, I don't know what they're looking for.
For anybody, he's making, for all intents and purposes, $9 million this year. Okay. And the good news is it expires at the end of the year, so they still have the freedom that Daryl has to have from year to year so that he's not cap-strung. But at $9 million a year, what are you willing to give up? Because if you're looking, you have to come within 15%. So if you want to come within 15% of the $9 million, it's going to be a package that, you know, unless they're – and again, it's Detroit, but they're not just going to take peanuts because they went out and made a move and gave up resources to get him to come to Detroit. And for all intents and purposes, they're basically saying he's probably going to walk at the end of the year. So what are you going to give us to make it make up for the fact that we gave up guys and draft picks to get him? And I don't know what you're willing to give up because aside once you hit past Trevor Ariza – everybody else on that roster is a combo platter that I'm not sure is going to entice Detroit, and I'm not sure it's a lot of money. Nene's at 3.4, and then Tarik Black, 3.2. Capella, you're not giving up, and he's only making 2.3. And Bamute's making 2, and I don't think you can afford to get rid of him. So now you're taking scraps to the trade table and saying, Detroit, will you take all this?
Well, not only that, but I'm kind of with you in the sense that – I don't think this team needs another guard, shooting or point.
Right.
I think if you're going to do anything, you might add some depth at a forward position or down low.
Yep.
Like you said, in the front court, power forward. I think that more than anything, this team could probably use another power forward. More so than a center, more so than a small forward. Because they have stretch fours, and P.J. Tucker, yeah, they don't really have a guy. I mean, Capella is their rebounder.
And here's the thing. Don't use we shouldn't even use the term center anymore because of the fact that even the All-Star game got away from it. The fact of the matter is they just need another
front
low
court.
Post
yeah,
guy.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. They need a banger. They need a guy that can rebound the ball, play some defense, I think, more than a guard. Because you've got Harden, Green, Paul, and Gordon. Where are you going to find room for an Avery Bradley in that mix?
Not at the right
price.
Yeah,
in front of Green, but it...
Sure. I mean, look, Barry, but at the right price, if you could concoct some kind of
absolutely a
combo platter... to get an Avery Bradley without having to really tinker with your rotation, you would definitely say it's enough. If you can upgrade...
Okay, but what role does he play on this team? What role does Avery Bradley play on this team? And are you bringing him in as the first man off the bench in front of Eric Gordon?
No,
or
see,
after? Are you going to wait?
Yeah. You're going to go
what
small.
Do you
do? No matter what, you're going small. And you're going for defense, three-point shooting, and depth. But you're right. You're not going to disrupt the rotation that you've already worked this hard to try and figure out. The one guy they'd love to unload, and I don't care what anybody says about how he just does the little things, at $19.5 million a year, the Ryan Anderson that the Rockets have gotten since they've gotten him is not working.
You know what? He was asked when Ryan Anderson was initially, you know, entered into the NBA – apparently, some team wanted him to be the guy that makes other teams other players better on the team. So he asked, "How does Ryan Anderson make this team play better?" And D'Antoni listed a couple of reasons why is he not shooting well. Well, we're not putting him in the position to shoot the basketball well. So a lot of times it's not Ryan Anderson. So
you believe that?
I don't know if Ryan Anderson has nudes of somebody in that Rockets organization, but that's exactly what he said before the Suns game.
Barry, you're a Rockets fan, first and foremost, anyway, but you tell me. I mean, if Ryan Anderson was making $7.4 million a year, mm-hmm. it'd be a lot easier to swallow no matter what he was doing and how much he was scoring. But secondly, that's a Bill O'Brien answer. You're going to protect your guys to try and keep your locker room intact. But the fact of the matter is, I would guarantee you behind closed doors, they're trying to figure out what the hell's wrong with Ryan Anderson, too. And the third thing is shot selection. If Ryan Anderson is having one of those hot streaks, I don't care if he shoots it from Galveston. But at the same time, when he's not shooting it well, stop shooting 45-footers. 23-3 or 23-5 is all you got to do. 23-9, whatever it is. That's all you got to shoot it at. And you're probably going to make a better percentage.
My only problem is... problem of all the comments he made was we're not putting him in a position to shoot. I mean, I can't tell you how many times he passed up the open shot this season alone.
But when it's not going well, he runs
time and time again. Don't tell me you're not putting him in the best position to shoot. I see him open all the time. He knows when his shot is not following, and so he passes the ball. You know, he's 3-for-7, 2-for-6, 2-for-9. This is very common for Ryan Anderson. To make two three-pointers, and then he's done for the rest
well,
of the night.
Well, all I know is he is a 38% shooter from three-point range
extremely
for his
deceiving.
Career.
Extremely right. deceiving.
And so far this year, he's shooting 36.6%, which is the exact same number he shot his final year in New Orleans. So you knew that he was capable of that when you went out and made the deal for him. What the difference is that he was averaging 17 points a game in New Orleans. This year, he's averaging 10. Now, is that partly because there's just not enough ball to go around? And the points are coming because they're winning. They're winning in spite of him.
He's getting the open shots.
He's getting the looks.
They're winning in spite of him. One, so it's not like they're you know going to finish the season at 500 and barely make the playoffs because of Ryan Anderson. This is still one of the most potent teams in the NBA, even with him there. And yes, they could be better, but his numbers, other than points scored per game, are almost identical to what he put up his final year in New Orleans. This is what you went out and gave the money for, the exact stat line you're getting this year.
I think that to a certain extent, to their defense, the Rockets probably signed him with a little bit of hope saying, hey, this guy is going to succeed in the system that D'Antoni brings to this Absolutely. To this team. Look, Gordon didn't have a really good year coming out of New Orleans. Actually, if you ask a lot of Pelicans fans, they don't like Eric Gordon.
They booed him.
They don't like Eric Gordon at all, but he came in and he worked in this system fine. Gerald Green was practically unemployed until the Rockets came and got him. He went and scored 27 points one game and I think 24 in the other. So it's really, Ryan Anderson should have done much better in this system.
Who's got a better three-point percentage this year, Eric Gordon or Ryan Anderson?
I'd probably say Ryan Anderson.
He does.
Think about
absolutely.
Eric Gordon's
by almost 30%. Too. But my point is, again, Eric Gordon's numbers are better. True. But he's shooting 33.6% from three-point range. He was shooting 38 his final year in New Orleans. Last year, he shot 37. Last year, Ryan Anderson shot 40. So it's just
– Eric Gordon
is naive, but I agree to – and I'll take Nick's point to a step further – they saw what they were doing with what Ryan Anderson was doing in New Orleans and thought when he comes to our system, he's going to do so much more because everybody in their mother was saying he is the ideal stretch for a Houston offense. And so there's no doubt that they gave him the contract because they expected those numbers were just going to go through the roof because of the fact he was going to get more open looks. He had less to worry about. He had more superstars.
What do you base that on? He shot 34% and 36% his final 2 years there from three-point range. What do you base that on?
Just the fact that they made James Harden grabbing attention in that offense, one, there's more volume shots in a 48-minute game.
The percentage is the percentage. No matter how many shots you get, you're still if you shoot 34%,
it to go whether you get 100 or 1,000,
whether you get 100 or 1,000, you're going to shoot 34%. But that's a percentage.
Okay, you asked, and I'm trying to give you the perspective of the fact that in New Orleans, he was being keyed on more and still shooting that percentage. They thought with James Harden and all the attention he draws, he's going to be getting so many more open looks. That percentage is no doubt going to go up. His scoring average is going to go up. And there were a lot of expectations of Ryan Anderson because in a lot of people's minds, he was the ideal stretch for a Rockets offense. And it just hasn't worked out.
His percentage did go up last year. He shot 40, but he only averaged 13 points as opposed to the 17 his final year, but the year before that, when he shot 34%, he averaged 13 points. Ryan Anderson's basically given them what they paid for. Across the board, his stats are very similar. If you combine the last 2 years in New Orleans to what he's doing this year in 2 years, this is now whether you want to question whether they gave him too much money, they were desperate maybe, but he's what he was. It's almost identical.
Okay. We're going to continue to roll on. We still got some other things that we want to get to in the final half hour of the show. If you want to join the show, 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line. Call, text, or tweet. Back with the final 30 minutes. It's the usual suspects on ESPN 97.5.
This is DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver for the Houston Texans, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Usual Suspects, final half hour of the big show before we turn it over to Fred, AJ Jung, and The Blitz. We've talked basketball. We've talked Pro Bowl. We've talked, which is football, I guess. We've talked a whole bunch of stuff, including the Brady radio fiasco that's been going on as well. But one thing we haven't touched on yet that we felt like was a must mention, and that is all the stuff that's going on at Michigan State. And I was ready to go to bed Friday night and caught the post-game press conference that Izzo had after the home game the Spartans had the Badgers, which I was kind of interested in, obviously, for obvious reasons anyway. But then on top of that, ESPN ran their in-depth outside the lines on how much energy that they have expounded between resources and talent investigating everything going down in Michigan State. And I'm telling you what, fellas, I tweeted it earlier today. To me, it just seems like it's going to get a hell of a lot worse at Michigan State before it gets better. And they couldn't handle most of it any worse than they have.
Yeah, it's been a PR nightmare. It's been sad. I think one of the things that I can't help but watch, think when I watch all this go down over and over again is if these guys would have just done the right thing, if they would have, if you could just put winning secondary to people.
Winning and revenue and reputation and exposure. If you just put
all of that comes with the winning. So, yep. I mean, everything else you listed comes because of the winning. So they sit on their hands, or they turn a blind eye, or they tend to ignore, or maybe half-ass make an effort. Like, oh, well, yeah, well, I filed a report. But did you follow up? Did you discipline the player? Did you suspend them? Did you – it's really sad when it's become so important and so vital for these colleges and these schools and these programs where just common decency – take second place to winning. And that's just what I keep thinking is it, not that, but I also keep thinking if your dumbass would have just done the right thing, you wouldn't be here right now. You could stand at that podium and look every person in the media in their eyes and say with conviction and mean it when you say, I did the right thing. And no one is believing these guys.
And it was the outside the lines reporter that was questioning Tom Izzo. And the last thing you want to do when you're being asked about, a scandal that regarding sexual misconduct is not answer the question. And Tom Izzo seemed very uncomfortable at the presser. It sounded something like this.
Was charged with assault and battery for punching a female student in the face. There were witnesses. She was injured. Why was he allowed to continue with the coaching staff and be with the team while charges were pending?
Well, as I said before, we'll cooperate with any investigation and always have. We've done it before and we'll do it moving forward. And that's about all I'm going to say on it, that we did cooperate with everything.
We want to give you every opportunity to answer questions. There's a lot of questions. A big one is, why did Travis leave the program in 2010?
I don't know what you mean. He graduated.
He was with your staff throughout 2010. An allegation came forward later that year that from a woman and her family to the athletic department that he and two of your players raped her. He then left the program later that year in 2010. Why?
To be honest with you, I don't remember why he left. I went to Europe to play, and as you know, I'll still say I'll cooperate with any investigation that's made. I did it then, I did it before, and I'm not going to answer any questions that aren't pertaining to either basketball or things that I am not going to talk about right now.
Let me ask you this question then. Looking back at the way sexual assault allegations have been handled by your basketball program, do you have any regrets?
I've cooperated every investigation, every one. And I will continue to cooperate with every investigation, every one.
Here's the thing. If you're really... You go back and look, and without taking too much time, but he also, when he was questioned last week after the Indiana game about his feelings on the whole Larry Nassar trial, his quote was, "It's been a very difficult week for me. As a father, it's been difficult. I listen to the stories of these courageous women. I look at the survivors who spoke, and in all honesty, Nassar permanently damaged and changed the lives of so many people." And he goes on and on and on, to which Allie Raisman's mother said, "Really? Like, did you even bother to listen to the testimony of the actual victims to realize that, they were the ones that were abused. They were the ones that took all this, and it wasn't about you. So then he starts taking the company line on how he's going to respond. And I don't know what you heard about in that sequence right there, Barry. The one thing that I kept hearing is, of course you follow along with the investigations, because at the end of the day, you knew that someone within the investigations was going to take care of it and make it all go away.
It's hard to listen to it, because you can tell that this is a man that's not prepared to answer honestly these questions. He's either reading something that a lawyer wrote, or he is skirting around the actual question that's being asked. Like, what was the one about the, do you have any regrets
with the way your school has handled this?
And as instead of saying no, because I did everything within my power to make sure that this was handled appropriately, or in saying, you know what, I do, because I don't feel like I did enough and I could have done more and I should have done better. And I apologize to the victims. I apologize to this university. I mean, you could, there's so many different ways, but instead he's just silently staring and says, well, I cooperated with all his bet. It's disgusting, really.
And she was talking about Travis Walton, who was a former player there. He became a grad assistant, and then I think he became a coach for the G League,
Lakers G League team.
Okay, the Lakers.
Yep. Whom they immediately fired him, right?
No, they
suspended him.
They put him on paid leave.
Well.
Pending. And now you got a Michigan State guy at the helm in Magic Johnson, too. So I don't know how long that's going to last, but that'll be scrutinized at some point, too.
Yeah. And then Magic, he doesn't remember.
Magic came out today on Twitter and said, anyone associated with the university, from the hierarchy, the faculty, to anybody involved, if they knew about any of this stuff and didn't act on it, they should all be fired.
He's right.
That's the only way to approach it.
He's absolutely right.
And here's the funny thing. We're just talking about the basketball side of this, but Mark D'Antonio, the football coach, during the same Outside the Lines show and being questioned, when he first referred to everything that was going on, said, this is the first time we've ever had to deal with something like this in the football program, to which it was pointed out very quickly, that's false, because there's been like 11 other allegations.
Yeah. It's ugly, man. It's like I said, you wonder what goes on in these people's minds where they think, well, you know what? Don't worry about it. We'll just make this go away.
I think the sad thing is
it's not going to go away.
No. I think there's a few more scandals left to be revealed. There's a scandal in every major university that needs to be unfolded.
I think a few might be underestimating it. I would be willing to bet you that across this country.
We should play a bet. Like, who's the? Well, actually, that's probably bad. The next scandal.
Why not?
It could be a bet. It could be a different type of scandal. It doesn't have to necessarily be as bad as this sexual one, because you're talking about underage girls. But still, I'll make the first prediction. I'll say it's an SEC team, but I won't say which one. I'll pick an SEC team.
Okay.
Because there's got to be an SEC team that's done something like this in football.
Right.
World, but it's a CYA on steroids when you're talking about college athletics, because it's so hyper-competitive. All they're thinking about is keep my program out of the news and keep it clean so I can keep getting recruits and keep my job and keep doing things. They're not thinking about victims.
You'd almost be stupid if you're a school and you don't have someone hired specifically to do that. And that's what PR is, essentially. But
yeah. Well, here's the thing that troubles me the most, is if it wasn't for these brave women that came forward and were able to say, you know, good what, point. Enough's enough.
Still be going on.
We wouldn't know about this.
Nope.
And this wouldn't be in the public eye. And it would still be going on.
And all these people would still have their jobs.
And so you wonder how many women out there have gone through this at other universities and are thinking, this is BS. I'm saying something.
Did you see when Larry Nassar, when he was being sentenced, he was like he was reading his apology.
He
would turn around
to them. Yeah.
And when he turned around like the second or third time, they like, just from looking at him, they all started crying. Like, maybe you could hear like six, seven, eight of them cry in the background. Just that's how traumatized they were with him just turning around and looking at him.
Man.
Yeah, it's bad.
Yep.
And it's like I said, I think it's only going to get worse before it gets better. And that's because there's still more skeletons in the closet and more things that have to be done. That's going to be a hell of a cleanup process. And I'm not sure if you ever get it right at Michigan State. Right now, I want to tell you guys, we have one segment to go on the big show. But before we get to that, I want to tell you about my good friends at Gallery Furniture, because it's great to have Mattress Mac on board for all the things that he does in the Houston community. It's great to have him associated with our show and this station, because you know what kind of a hero he was during the hurricane. And and you know how he has gone above and beyond to try and help the people of Houston. Well, he also tries to help you when you're in the market for furniture, and he does it because of the fact that he wants you to come back again and again. He wants to build that relationship so that you know who you can trust, that you're going to get a fair deal, you're going to get great customer service, and you're going to get the best price, and you're never going to have to question that. And that's just a fact when you go to Gallery Furniture. They have three locations across the Houston area. They have the Post Oak location right there across from Dillard's in the Galleria. They have the I-45 North exit Tidwell Parker, the convenient location where Mac is there every single day. And they have the Grand Parkway location, which is Katie and Sugarland customers. And they all have the same deals. That means right now you buy $4,000 or more of Gallery Furniture, you get 36% back in accessories. So you're going to continue to get more above and beyond your purchase price. They also know that you guys all work and you need later hours. They're open till 10 every night. And what they say is what they do. So that means no back order slips. We've had people here at the station who went out there and bought furniture and got it the same day. When they shopped it around town before they bought it Gallery, they found out there were back order slips that were going to keep them from getting the stuff that they ordered from 2 weeks to 2 months. And it gets crazier than that because Gallery still beat all the prices, and they made sure that they delivered the same day. And when the delivery guys showed up, they said, what else do you need done? Do you need us to take anything away, move some furniture so where you can arrange it to where you want it? We'll do all of that and more because that's the way we do business at Gallery Furniture. And the main thing that Max says that's always going to be the case when you shop Gallery Furniture is they're going to save you money. He says it because he believes it, because that's the way they do it every single day. No back order slips. Gallery really will save you money.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back for the final segment of The Usual Suspects.
What was that? You got to explain yourself now.
That was just ridiculous. You can't just do that.
I can do it if I want to because I just did.
Came right out of that Michigan State story and then you do that. That's not nice.
Well, go ahead. Tell them why. Neither one of you want to step up, but you brought it up.
By the way, when they forced me to work with you, Barry, when did they make you responsible for climate control? I just want to know. How come you are making? I'm freezing my ass off in this producer's booth. I'm cold.
Meow. What's that noise? Did you hear that? What?
It's clear because... But Nick, he still loves you because look at his shirt. Meow. This guy loves cats.
What is that?
So he still loves you.
Did you hear that?
Meow.
What is that noise?
It's weird because he'll actually wear, like, not bring a jacket, but he'll wear a sweater or a shirt if he's cold.
In the winter. When it's 40 degrees.
Joel's from Milwaukee and he's fully clothed right now.
Yeah, he's got on a fur coat.
I don't know about a fur coat, but he's got a jacket.
He's got his Uggs on.
A hat.
Yeah. I'm just letting y'all go because I just get, instead of dealing with the tug of war on the thermostat, I just.
Guys. It's not like I'm defending my territory. It's just when I'm hot, I turn it down. When I'm cold, I turn it up. If you're cold, walk in here or walk over there and turn it up.
Yeah, Nick, walk easy. Right over there right now.
I did do that earlier in the first hour when Palillo was here. I just walked in and turned it up.
And then I got hot and my back started getting sweaty, so I turned it down. And now if you're cold, we can turn it up.
Okay.
Meow. Well, I mean, like, what's the problem?
Are you going to keep doing that?
Meow.
Yeah.
It's only 5 minutes left in the show.
Yeah, sorry, thank God. Because we don't have the shortest wait in the industry for a reason, we've got people that patiently wait for us, and we appreciate that. So, Skip, before we get out of here, we want you to get on the air, talk about the Michigan State thing.
Yeah, man, I just had a couple of things. Number one, I don't really understand how all of these people, other than, you know, trying to protect their brand, and it's probably money involved. But as soon as, you know, like Magic said, as soon as you get a situation like that, you got to attack it. And, you know, you would get more respect if you just got rid of the guy from the beginning.
Yep.
Because any other problems that you have, the longer you wait, it's just going to get worse, you know. And the second thing is I agree with you guys about what else is coming, because just like when Hollywood, you know, finally started acknowledging that they had a bunch of predators out there, there are thousands of predators at these universities and these colleges. And I think the floodgates are going to come open, and I would say within the next couple of months, it's going to get pretty bad.
I'm with you, Skip.
That's just what I believe.
No, we appreciate the call, Skip. Thanks.
I think you're right, and I think part of it is because these athletes are so feel so entitled, and you get the sense that these guys think that they're above everything when they get to that university, that no matter, I mean, they're the big man on campus, and if they screw up, they know that their coaches and this program and everybody involved is going to cover up for them because they value winning above everything. And so these players think that they can get away with these things, and until now, they have.
Think about the track record, right? Think about what we were talking about last segment. Think about why they're trying to stick to the company line and say the right thing. If you're honest and you know that you did the right thing from the get-go, you don't have to worry about saying the right anything. You just say, look, we did what we were supposed to do. We knew this case came up. We addressed it. We attacked it. And you can speak freely because you were honest. But just the way his presentation was, and then the fact that he's trying to stick to the cut, you know that he's burying so much.
Oh, yeah. He knows way more. And that's the problem. And he's just worried about it becoming official, that he gets caught. And everybody knows that he knew about certain people and their misconduct. And that's basically the end of his career, because it's starting to look like now, because the trend of all this sexual misconduct is of it becoming to light, it's becoming so common that it's not just, oh, I'm going to get fired now and I'll get another gig. It's, I'm going to get fired now and I may not ever get another gig.
Art Briles. And here's the thing.
I thought Briles for a second there was going to get another gig, and he did very briefly at some high school.
But the public's not going to let that happen.
Yeah, no way.
But God.
But here's the thing. It's, you can say, and Barry, what you were saying is true in the fact that they feel empowered, like they're going to get away with it. But the reason why they do is because they are empowered by the administration at the university. And all it takes is one case in which they sweep it under the rug, and all of a sudden the word, because you think about it, these kids, they might have been the star of their high school, but when they get on campus, they got to prove themselves all over again. A lot of that swagger and that confidence gets kind of pushed down a little bit. But the minute that they feel like they're the man again, well, then they're swagging and they're doing whatever they want and please, because they're invincible again.
Yeah,
and
that's what I'm saying.
The reason why they feel that invincibility is the authority that's supposed to be there when you leave your parents and you leave home is supposed to be the coach that you signed to play for. And they're supposed to police their program. And if they're not doing it, then the whole program's running roughshod.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's my, that's,
yeah, I'm with you.
It's sad to see this. It's, I mean, I don't think we're not overstating it when you say it's tragic. I mean, it's one thing to look at programs and coaches. There are plenty of lives for these women that have been ruined, that have been devastated by what has happened. And that's still not even at the forefront. I know that we're talking about this because of the injustice that's been done to them. But I want to know, what has Izzo done for the victims? Because he talked about it.
He keeps saying it.
Well, he says, I only want to talk about the victims. Well, what are you doing for them?
And if you haven't seen the Outside the Lines.
That's what I want to know.
If you haven't seen the Outside the Lines on Michigan State.
Very powerful.
And at least in one specific case, the female that was the victim killed herself. Yeah. She took her own life because of all of this. And more. And they didn't find out a lot of it until they found her handwritten notes, like a diary, after all of this had gone down, and to know that nothing had been done about it. And yet, you hear Izzo make these comments and you're wondering, do you have a conscience?
Yeah, well, I mean, what have you done? I want to know. Have you just said a bunch of words into a mic and walked off? Or have you actually done something?
Yep, pretty much. All right, we're going to wrap things up. Turn it over to Fred, AJ, Jung, and the Blitz. They're next right here on ESPN 97.5. For Nick, for Barry, I'm Joel. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Right here, 1 to 4, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Good night, everybody. Let's go and see the stars, the Milky Way, or even
Mars. Yeah, boy. ESPN 97.5.